This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So that gives an there's an immunological deficit. There's an immunological weakness, which makes them more likely to become more ill with anything they get.
That's WHO spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris saying refugees are more susceptible to mpox and other diseases. Details coming up. Also, Tunisia's President Kais Saied fires cabinet ministers over national security concerns. And Africa's first solar-powered tractor is undergoing field tests in Malawi. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. United Nations agencies warn that refugees and displaced communities in the Democratic Republic of Congo and other African countries with mpox outbreaks are at particular risk of illness and death because of their living conditions. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports at least 42 suspected cases of mpox have been identified within the displaced population in Democratic Republic of Congo's South Kivu province, one of the regions hardest hit by the disease. Confirmed and suspected cases of the new clade 1B strain also have been recorded among refugee populations in the Republic of the Congo and Rwanda. Dr. Alan Maina, the United Nations Refugee Agency's public health chief, says more suspected cases are being reported in conflict-impacted provinces in eastern DRC. That region hosts the majority of the country's 7.3 million internally displaced people. He warns the virus threatens to worsen the plight of millions of people devastated by decades of conflict who have been forcibly uprooted from their homes and subjected to human rights abuses. He adds that people fleeing violence are unable to implement many of the mpox prevention measures that could keep them healthy and save their lives.
With this, we see that displaced families living in crowded schools, shelters, and tents, and also in churches, and also in farmers' fields, and they have no space to isolate when they develop symptoms of the disease. UNHCR staff have found in some afflicted individuals trying diligently to follow preventive measures and protect their communities, including by sleeping outside.
Today, the World Health Organization reported more than 18,000 suspected and confirmed cases of mpox, with 615 deaths in the Democratic Republic of Congo so far this year. It says more than 220 cases of the new strain clade 1B have been found in the DRC's neighbors. WHO spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris says the disease is spreading quickly, noting that 5,400 suspected cases have been recorded in North and South Kivu as of August. She says refugees and displaced people are at particular risk.
Just heard about the description of the conditions under which people are living and have arrived in very, you know, already very stressed, hungry, terrified, displaced. So that gives there's an immunological deficit. There's an immunological weakness which makes them more likely to become more ill with anything they get, including mpox.
Mpox is spread through close physical contact. Harris says this makes children particularly vulnerable as the disease spreads easily through skin-to-skin contact. She says children who have close physical contact with an infected adult relative cannot fight off the virus because of weaker immune systems. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tunisia's President Kais Saied announced on Sunday a broad cabinet reshuffle of 19 ministers, nearly the entire government, ahead of the October 6th presidential election. He said he fired ministers over national security concerns. Saied earlier this month dismissed Prime Minister Ahmed Hachani. A number of Saied's political opponents and critics, including some who sought to challenge him in the election, are in jail or face trial. Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at Carnegie's Middle East program, discussed this latest development with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shinawi.
During his tenure, Saeed has regularly fired ministers, usually offering little or no explanation. So this is not really surprising, but this reshuffle is a bit different. And I think on the one hand, it's quite substantial. The number of ministers that were replaced is quite large. And more importantly, it falls just 6 weeks ahead of the presidential election, which suggests that Saeed is cleaning house to further ensure a clear and easy path for his reelection. And I think importantly, also, we should pay attention to who he has kept, who he didn't fire, particularly the ministers of justice and the interior. And these are the people that have really been essential for Saeed in helping him carry out parts of his political reorganization and his repression campaigns.
The 66 years old president is seeking a second term, part of what he has called a war of liberation and self-determination, aiming to establish a new republic. A number of Saeed's political opponents and critics, including some Tunisians who had sought to challenge him in October 6 election, are currently in jail or face trial. How would that add to democracy backsliding in Tunisia?
I think what we've seen is the speed and the precision at which Saeed has eliminated all of his potential opponents in advance of this election really makes clear that Tunisia can no longer be considered even a procedural democracy. You know, we're seeing every week a new critic or a potential presidential candidate rounded up and thrown in jail. As soon as someone announces they're running, you know, there's something that they're arrested for. And so, you know, for all intents and purposes, this election was over before it even began. And I think what we've seen Saeed do is very deftly pave the way for his reelection and for a second term. And in that second term, he has the ability to further implement repression and to target any remaining vestiges of the democratic transition.
Unemployment in Tunisia stands at 16%, while the country suffers from water stress, and Tunisia has faced mounting financial challenging and debt levels at about 80% of its GDP. Its economy is at standstill with a growth of only 0.4%. How would that impact Tunisian voters in October?
I think in this election, you know, voters are not really going to be choosing between candidates based on their policy positions. This is really just a referendum on Saeed himself and a question of how many Tunisians are willing to cast a ballot for him. And the real question mark around the election is whether anyone actually shows up to vote. We've seen increasing political apathy over the past couple of years. And, you know, based on the various statistics that you just mentioned, you know, many Tunisians are really too busy with their everyday life and trying to feed themselves and their families that they don't have time to worry about politics. We've also heard from several people in the opposition that said they will boycott the election because they see it as a farce. And so I expect that this election is likely going to go the way of the past few elections during Saeed's tenure, which is with very low turnout and few Tunisians engaged in the political process.
That was Sarah Yerkes, a senior fellow at Carnegie's Middle East program, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. Africa's first solar-powered tractor is undergoing field tests in Malawi. Experts say the hand-operated AFTRAC, or Africa tractor, could help smallholder farmers improve crop yields. Lamek Masina reports from Mzimba district in northern Malawi.
The solar-powered AFTRAC tractor aims to help Malawi's smallholder farmers break through the hard top layer of their soil. Agriculture experts say crops struggle to grow in the packed earth. Isaac Munju Chavula is the country director for the farming charity Tiani.
Over decades, what has happened with our soils is there is a compacted layer, so compact that even the penetration of roots is challenged. Even infiltration of rainwater is challenged. So because of that, yields have been declining.
Deep bed farming is an agricultural practice the charity Tiani is championing in Malawi. It involves deep tillage to break down the hard pan soil. Chavula says AFTRAC is a collaboration with Longborough University in England, and that it is the first for smallholder farmers in rural Africa who have long struggled to break the hard layer of soil with a handheld hoe.
So you drive it, you are walking behind it, and by pulling, you can dig a canal, and that is quite unique because we don't have such tractors around here. And those who have traveled in Africa this year, not even in Africa, we don't have.
Preliminary testing suggests the need for adjustments to improve the tractor's capability. Tokozani Kampata is the AFTRAC project manager in Malawi.
So when we're trying it, we see that sometimes maybe it goes off, sometimes it's okay, but also it can do the job very well. Even if it does the job very well, but it's not really breaking the way we want, like the way we do debate farming.
The adjustments, she says, would include increasing the number of chains to till the land. Despite some preliminary shortfalls, AFTRAC won the $1 million Milken Motsepe Green Energy Prize in May. The tractor comes with a solar panel for charging its batteries. Users can plug into the solar array to power their homes, which farmers in the Emzam village like Elizabeth Gondwin appreciate. She says some people from neighboring villages admire them, saying their village has received a blessing from God. Gondwin says they now have solar electricity they use for lighting and connecting to TV screens the whole day and the whole night. Government agriculture field officers believe the project would help Malawi's farmers increase crop yields once adopted. Joseph Chawinga is an extension worker in the Malawi Ministry of Agriculture.
It will be high income for the farmers as compared to using our local method, that is using a hoe. So as compared to a tractor, then they'll be able to cultivate a very big land.
However, Tiani says the project would encourage farmers to form cooperatives to share the benefits of the AFTRAC project and their deep bed farming method. For Lamek Masina in Nzimba District, Malawi, Steve Miller, VOA News.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. According to Nigeria Drug Enforcement Agency statistics, more than 14 million people in the country misuse drugs. Some of them are children or teens. Al-Hassan Bala reports from Kano, Nigeria.
The new road in the Sabangari area of the northern Nigeria city of Kano is a place where adults and many teenagers come to smoke drugs like cannabis or half inhalants, also known as gum or sholisho. 13-year-old Ibrahim Idris uses cannabis and an inhalant called solution. He went into a rehabilitation center 6 months ago, but is now back to using. Ibrahim says he is enjoying it here, and in fact, everyone here loves it. No one here can leave this place. Even if you try to take us back to our parent, we will have to return because we love it. But 11-year-old Kumatu just wants to return to his family. Kumatu says he wants someone to take him back to his parents. He is sure even his mom has forgotten about him or thinks he is dead by now. He says he is a cannabis smoker. According to Nigeria's National Drug Law Enforcement Agency, over 40 million Nigerians engage in the misuse of drugs, mostly cannabis. A lack of drug rehabilitation centers in Nigeria inspired Kano-based anti-drug activist Abubakar Shaibu Metumaki to build a private center mainly for underage addicts. A former user himself, Metumaki explains why some young Nigerians turn to drugs.
The major reason addicts in Nigeria return to drug abuse are two. The first one is lack of parental guide and training. The second reason is poverty in many homes.
Muhammad Awal Imrana's two sons, aged 16 and 18, are drug users. He says parents should not abandon their children to drugs, but keep trying to help them. He says his sons are addicted to drugs. He has been keeping them close to him, and that has helped. One has stopped and the other has reduced his drug use. Nigeria's National Drug Law Enforcement Agency says that over the past 3 years, it has seized 7.6 million kilograms of illicit drugs such as cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and cannabis. and it has had success in court against those who sell them.
When you also look at the number of prosecution, that is convictions, though the agency had also prosecuted and successfully gotten convicted within the same bracket, over 9,000.
According to a 2021 United Nations report, Nigeria will have 20 million drug users by the year 2030. But Ibrahim Idris and some of the people he uses with have other plans. They say they hope to get helped and return to a clean life. Al-Hassan Bala, VOA News, Kano, Nigeria.
The United Nations has called Sudan the worst displacement crisis in the world. It is where more than 12 million people have been displaced and more than 15,000 others have been killed in a civil war broke out in April of last year. The head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee recently spoke in Chicago on the sidelines of the Democratic National Committee about the plight of Sudanese and what the U.S. is doing to try to end the war. VOA's Carol Van Dam has more.
Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland, chairman of the powerful Foreign Relations Committee, talked to reporters here about a number of conflicts around the world, mostly about Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the Israeli-Hamas war. In an exclusive interview after his remarks at an event sponsored by the U.S. State Department's Foreign Press Center, VOA asked Cardin about what some observers have called the forgotten war, Sudan, and if Vice President Kamala Harris becomes president, what she might do differently.
I mention it all the time. It is a huge crisis. We don't want Darfur. We remember that from our earlier days. So we have to keep the focus on it. We're keeping the focus on it. I know that Vice President Harris is fully engaged on what's happening in Sudan.
Cardin says U.S. officials are cautiously optimistic about the ongoing peace talks underway in Geneva. So far, the only result of those talks has been the recent reopening of three crossing points for humanitarian aid. Representatives of the United States, the United Nations, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and one of the parties to the conflict, the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, have attended the meetings in Switzerland. Cardin says he hopes countries that have taken sides in the brutal war will stop providing weapons to either the Sudanese army or the RSF.
We hope that will become real, and we hope that the countries, particularly countries we have relations with, will recognize that they need to back off and make sure that there's a real process for peace.
The Geneva talks are focused on implementing agreements signed in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in May of 2023. That Jeddah declaration was signed by both parties to protect civilians and respect international humanitarian law. Another Jeddah agreement signed just 9 days later reiterated the importance of protecting civilians during a seven-day ceasefire. But that ceasefire was violated within hours, as were subsequent ceasefires. The International Rescue Committee, which puts out an emergency watch list each year on places of dire humanitarian conditions, placed Sudan at the top of its list this year. Carol Van Dam at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
Since 2020, Asian Americans have been the fastest growing group of eligible voters in the U.S., according to the Pew Research Center. In 2022, California had the most eligible Asian American voters in the U.S., followed by New York State and Texas. From Houston, Texas, Elizabeth Lee has more on the potential and challenges of the Asian American vote.
For flavors from Asia, Houston, Texas is a one-stop shop. The foods found here reflect the melting pot of Asian cultures living in the counties that make up the greater Houston region. One of them is suburban Fort Bend County, where Asians make up more than 21% of the population. It's also where Chinese-American immigrant J.J. Clements lives.
I think for either party, they really cannot afford to ignore the Asian community.
Asian Americans are among the fastest-growing ethnic groups in the U.S., according to census data. Voter turnout among this group has also seen record increases in the past two presidential elections.
I was scared. People didn't feel...
The Democratic nominee for president, Kamala Harris, has taken notice and recently released two ads targeting Asians. More Asian Americans call themselves Democrat than Republican. One reason?
more than half of Asian American voters are immigrants. Korean American Becky Kim is a first-time voter.
I think Trump's policies hurt minorities a lot.
Richard Murray is senior research fellow at the University of Houston.
A lot of his policies not only took aim at illegal immigrants from Mexico or South America, but also restricted legal immigration.
Still, a 2024 survey of Asian American voters found that 22% identify as Republicans. That includes Chinese American Daniel Wong.
Less government is what Asians want. More freedom and less tax.
The survey also found 31% of Asian American voters identify as independents. But 42% of Asian American voters surveyed say they have not been contacted by political candidates or a political party. Daniel Wong, who had served in local elected office, says Asian American voters are partly responsible.
We are not organized. We don't understand the American political system. And that's why we don't know how we're going to energize, put our energy together to suit for whatever common goal, which we don't have.
The projected 15 million Asian Americans eligible to vote have roots in different countries. Unifying Asian voters has been difficult. Getting Asians to donate to campaigns has also been a challenge, something Wong saw up close while running for a city council seat.
Asian, they are not used to donate to the political means. They don't understand how it works.
Clemens had also run for local office.
Asian society, I don't think they, like a Christian community, they have a habit to give. So you have to educate them and you need to outreach them.
During the last presidential election, close to 60% of Asian Americans voted. Political activists say forming relationships with new Asian American citizens and educating them about the political process will mobilize them to get involved. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Houston.
Al-Qaeda-linked extremists killed at least 100 villagers and soldiers in central Burkina Faso during a weekend attack. The Associated Press says a regional specialist called the attack one of the deadliest this year in the conflict-battered West African nation. Wasim Nasser, a Sahel specialist and senior research fellow at the Soufan Center Security Research Institution, said at least 100 bodies were counted in videos of the attack. He said villagers were helping security forces dig up trenches to protect security outposts on Saturday when militant fighters opened fire. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, prosecutors have called for the death penalty for 50 defendants, including three Americans, on trial for an alleged coup attempt. The French news agency AFP reported that the military prosecutor urged judges Tuesday to sentence to death all but one defendant. Armed men attacked the home of Economy Minister Vital Kamerhe earlier on May 19th, before moving on to the Palais des Nations, the houses, President Félix Tshisekedi's offices. The army later said security forces stopped an attempted coup. The army, the alleged plot was led by Christian Malanga, a Congolese man who DRC officials said was a naturalized American. Security forces killed him in a gunfight. The three Americans on trial include Malanga's son, Marseille Malanga, along with a Belgian, a Briton, and a Canadian, who are all naturalized Congolese. The trial began on June 7th. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.